Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. It's brought to you by Andrew Mark. And, of course, you can listen on Giants.com or go to your mobile app on your phone and go to the Giants mobile app. It's a great app. Check it out, and you can listen to it there as well. Again, you can also send your questions on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. And this morning, we're joined by Michael Eisen, beat reporter for Giants.com. Michael, how are you?
I'm well, John. How are you?
Of course, there was some bad news, and we'll start with this, I suppose, for Giant fans and for the Giants family last night, a former Giant passing away.
Yeah, Stacy Robinson, a receiver on the Super Bowl 21 and 25 teams, had cancer. We all just saw him last year at the Super Bowl 21 reunion. I just got off the phone 10 minutes ago with Phil Sims, who was talking about Stacy, and it was true. He said he never saw Stacy Robinson in a bad mood, always had a smile on his face, and was a pretty good receiver. You know, Phil was telling the story of Super Bowl 21 when, of course, Phil hit 22 or 25 passes, and how Stacy kept coming to him and said, "I'm open, I'm open, I'm open." And, you know, Phil said, we knew we had this play down the scene that we just couldn't get it to him. Finally, in the third quarter, we got it to him. And Phil said, even on the TV broadcast, you can see them really slapping palms because they finally connected on that play. So good receiver, good guy. Stacy Robinson is really going to be missed.
And you'll see that story from Michael later on today on Giants.com, some Stacy Robinson memories by some former teammates and some former Giants. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Let's start out on the phones and go to Victor in Texas. Victor, good morning, pal.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, John? How you doing, Mr. Eisen?
I'm fine. Great.
I just want to talk about this Junior Seau suicide deal. And I hate to start off on such a somber note, but I got a couple of things I got to put out there because, you know, a lot of people are saying that, you know, these are happening because of brain injuries. And, you know, they're out there saying these things, and it's not medically proven yet. And then you have some that, you know, they mentioned the military with it. And as you know, John, I'm in the military, and I've seen and witnessed a lot of things as far as, you know, suicide goes. And there's not a case that I've heard of or seen that a soldier has committed suicide due to TBI or brain injuries. Is there a case out there? Probably, but it hasn't been proven. But what I do know is I did have a soldier who actually took his own life, and it was not due to a brain injury. He was not in battle. It was emotional. It was an emotional response to a situation that he couldn't deal with. It was a form of a way out. And, you know, as human beings, we're emotional creatures. And, you know, to say that this happened because of traumatic brain injuries or too many concussions is just not true. And what we need to do, and this is what the Army does, they have a program called ACE, you know, where we look for signs for prevention. We have to get in front of this deal, you know, and it's called ACE, you know, where you ask this person. You have to be up front with them because a lot of the signs are disappearing now within, you know, giving away their things, doing odd things, you know, giving their possessions away. I believe Junior Seau went and bought a pistol 2 weeks before this. You know, are those odd things that happen? What the Army does is try to get ahead of this. And you ask the person, you have to be up front with them, hey, are you going to harm yourself? And, you know, and then you basically, you know, you care for them, then you escort them to help. You know, you got to get these people help. And it's an emotional response, in my opinion. I'm no doctor, but what I can tell you is a lot of the things that happen with soldiers is due because of an emotional response that they can't cope with. And when you introduce substance abuse as far as alcohol, it exacerbates that emotional state, and it takes them over the edge. So that's just my take on it. I just want to hear your thoughts on it. You can keep me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Victor, no worries. And I think your first point, I think, is the most important one. A lot of people are jumping to the conclusion that, oh, well, Junior Seau, you know, is a former football player. He had a concussion issue when he was a player. He shot himself in the chest. So concussions are the reason that Junior Seau ended up taking his own life. And like Victor said, the fact of the matter is right now we don't know. There are plenty of people the same age as Junior Seau that end up killing themselves, and it has nothing to do with concussions. It could be, like Victor said, an emotional thing or, you know, even like a physical thing, a chemical imbalance in the brain that has nothing to do with head injuries. And obviously, Michael, this is something that they're going to look at, but there is a lot of jumping to conclusions going on. That's what happens in situations like this. Frankly, nobody knows what the deal is right now.
No, and there have been stories that, you know, he might have just been depressed, that, you know, he, like a lot of players, and this is where the whole issue comes in about should the NFL be helping these players transition into you know, their post-career lives, that, you know, he had trouble adjusting to his post-football life. That, you know, once you step away from the arena, it's a whole different world. And again, it's all just speculation. Now, nobody knows. It may always be speculation. We may never know why Junior Seau did what he did. But to say it's because he had a brain injury or he was depressed or, you know, we don't know. It's just all hearsay.
Whenever a guy goes to battle every Sunday like Junior Seau did, you get, I mean, look, I've never done it, but I can imagine it's a emotional and physical and high that you just can't find anywhere else. And when you have to give that up, and clearly Junior Seau is one of those guys that didn't want to give it up. There's a reason he played till he was 40,
yeah.
And he really wasn't the same player that he was when he was with the Patriots. I mean, it could just be that he couldn't adjust without having that emotional high every week.
Well, that's part of it. There's also, you know, when you're in the NFL, your life is very structured. You have to be certain place at a certain time every day. Your yearly calendar is, you know, you go to training camp in July, you have your season, you have a brief off season, you get back into workouts, everything's structured. You do that for 30 years. I mean, even before he was an NFL player, and then all of a sudden your life's not structured. What do I do now? I don't know. Again, we're just speculating, but it could all be a part of it.
And Victor mentioned staying ahead of it, and obviously, you know, in the case of Junior Seau, you're talking about friends and family and such. But in terms of the NFL, the punishment with the bounty scandal, is the NFL trying to stay ahead of this with the head injuries? And there's already a lawsuit against the NFL from retired players in regards to that. And that's one of the reasons, I think, Michael, the penalties for the Jonathan Vilmas of the world, the Will Smiths of the world, and, of course, you know, Vitt and Peyton and all those guys, why they were so extreme. The NFL is trying to stay ahead of this and trying to prevent this stuff and make it known to their athletes, to their coaches, to their general managers, even to their owners, that we're going to enforce the rules. We're going to protect these players no matter what, because we want to avoid potential tragedies like this, again, if there is a connection.
Yeah, well, there's no question the NFL is really doing everything it can to avoid the serious head injuries. But I think what people are focusing on now is, should players have, for instance, mandatory counseling after they retire and help ease their transition into the quote-unquote real world? And I don't know that, you know, can you force a player to undergo? I don't know.
And frankly, most players are just great. So, yeah. I mean, again, it's some things, and I know it sounds a little heartless to say, but, you know, sometimes things just can't be prevented. You can do all you can to try to prevent a terrible tragedy like Junior Seau taking his own life, but, I mean, at some point, the individual has to take responsibility for the individual, and whether it's the NFL or society in general, there are only so many things that it can do to try to help somebody.
Yes.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter at #GiantsChat. Michael, I did want to ask you about the suspensions for the players for the bounty scam. I don't think we had a chance to talk about that yet. Were you surprised that Vilma got all 16 games?
Yeah, I was a little bit, John. I thought, you know, it's hard to really make a judgment because the NFL hasn't released all the information it has, which is why, obviously, why the Players Association is so upset. But, yeah, I think, you know, 16 games, I didn't expect an entire season. But, obviously, the NFL feels, it has the evidence to back it up. They've had lawyers look at the evidence. And, you know, again, it's without knowing what the NFL knows, it's hard to say, yeah, I think it's a punishment or it's an unjust punishment, because I don't have the information the NFL has.
Mike, we have a couple questions coming in. We're going to talk about rookie minicamp in a second, but a couple questions on Twitter at #GiantsChat. This question in from Brian Taylor. He thinks Dominic Hickson has the best chance of getting that third wide receiver spot. What are your thoughts on how that battle's going to break down? Oh, Hickson was working out outside yesterday, the first day the Giants were able to do some field work. Phase two of the offseason program is in effect. And, boy, Hickson was running around nice. He was cutting. He was running. He looked like his old self to me.
Yeah, he does look good. He says he feels great. But, you know, he's coming off a second ACL in as many years. You don't know how it's how he's going to be. I know that he'd like to return. And, look, let's face it, the Giants really need a boost in their return game. You know, I if you ask me among Barden, Jernigan and Hickson, who I would think would get the third receiver.
Well, let's throw Randall in there, too.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, of those three guys, you know, I would pick Hickson.
Okay.
But the wild card is Reuben Randall. We haven't seen him yet. He'll be here at the rookie minicamp. If he is as talented as we've told he is, then I would say that he is at least the co-favorite with Hixon in my mind to get that spot.
Another young guy that's kind of been on the practice squad, Mike, is tight end Christian Hopkins. Obviously, the Giants still looking for some depth at that position. What have you heard from the coaches about Christian Hopkins, the front office? What can the Giants expect from him this year? That question was in from Victor, by the way.
Yeah, they like him a lot. He's a big player, about 250 pounds, good blocker. You know, has to develop as a receiver, as so many of them do, as Jake Ballard did. You know, he's going to get a chance, you know, with Martellus Bennett here. And now Robinson, the draft choice, you know, I think it's going to be hard for him to earn a roster spot. But I do know the coaches view him very favorably.
How much can the Giants tell at rookie minicamp, Mike? You know, they're on the field. I think they have four practices in 2 days. And how much can the coaches really figure out from watching these guys on the field in such limited action?
Well, I think with the skill players, you can tell. You know, you get certainly an idea of their athleticism and their speed. And, excuse me, with all the players, you certainly get an idea of how quickly they pick things up mentally, because a lot gets thrown at them in the meetings. You know, you basically, you learn a few plays, you learn the offense, then you go right out on the field and run it. So you have to be able to pick things up quickly. You know, with the linemen, you're not going to tell a whole lot about them until they put pads on. You can't really judge linemen without pads.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Or any player, for that matter.
I mean, contact is the thing that really separates it once you get into game situations. But we all talk about the draft picks a lot, and the Giants haven't announced their undrafted free agent list that's coming to camp. But how much pressure is on these guys where they really need to show in a span of four practices that, boy, you should really take a look at me for this 90-man roster for training camp?
Well, I think the most pressure is on the players who are here on a tryout basis. You know, we have the draft picks. Obviously, they're going to be in training camp. We did sign the rookie free agents. I guess they're in somewhat of a precarious position, because if a tryout comes in who, at their position, who shows much more, they can always rip up that free agent contract and sign the second guy. But, you know, the pressure is really on, you know, these tryout guys. They don't have many chances to show what they can do. I think of a guy a few years ago, like, you know, Kevin Dockery came in here, and everyone kind of looked at him and said, you know, look at this little 5'8 cornerback trying out. You know, who are you kidding here? Well, Giants, Kevin Dockery was so impressive in a rookie minicamp. He was signed and wound up playing here for about 4 years and got a Super Bowl ring.
And he ended up going to play for Steve Spagnuolo in St. Louis after that, and has had a pretty good NFL career.
So these, rookie minicamps can be very important.
So, and you mentioned these trials that come in. These are guys that I guess the Giants, a lot of them they looked at on their local workout day over the course of the draft process, guys that haven't been drafted. And remember, that's where Victor Cruz came from. Yeah. He was a guy that they brought in from a local trial basis and really showed the Giants what he could do, and that's how he stuck.
and it's not just you know, local guys. It's guys who were on their draft board that weren't picked and weren't signed, that they had a grade on, that was an intriguing prospect. They bring them in, and they look at them in the rookie minicamp.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. And, Mike, you mentioned the skill positions. A couple guys you are going to get a chance to take a look at and maybe at least get a feel for their athleticism. The first-round pick, David Wilson, of course, the second-round pick, Reuben Randle. Let's talk about David Wilson first for a second. To me, and this even goes for training camp, you can't tell a whole lot about running backs, because running backs, they can look fast, they can look great, but if they're not worrying about some 275-pound defensive end or linebacker whacking them, who knows how they're really going to run when you get to game time. But I guess the Giants are at least excited to see how he does on blitz pickup, which is a mental thing you can learn, how he does getting out, maybe running routes, catching the football. Those are some of the things we can see about David Wilson this weekend.
Again, it's the same things, the athleticism, the speed, how quickly do you learn. Blitz pickup's going to be very important. When I talked to Ahmad Bradshaw last week about what David Wilson's got to do when he comes in here, the first thing Ahmad Bradshaw said is block. He's got to, you know, we don't put guys out there if they can't protect Eli. You got to be able to protect Eli Manning. So, you know, it's going to be, I think more, they know what David Wilson can do physically. I think it's a matter of, here's the playbook, let's see how fast you can digest it. Let's see if you know what you're doing. When we give you these 10 plays, let's see what you can do on the field when we hand you the ball.
And I mentioned it earlier in the show, but the Giants did field work for the first time this week as phase two of the offseason program begins. And I just noticed a bounce in everybody's step. They were tired of just being in the weight room. They actually got to go out. The quarterbacks threw passes, the wide receivers, the defense ran some drills. And it just seemed like a situation where the players and especially the coaches were, like, pretty excited to get out there in the field and actually, you know, do their jobs.
Yeah, the players, they've had some field work on their own. But yesterday was the first time they were allowed to have coaches with them. And they were very excited about it. I got to talk to Eli about it. And, you know, it's funny. He's a 9-year veteran. I mean, what's he throwing, about a jillion passes? And he was excited just to get out there and, you know, to be with the coaches again. And the players all say the same thing. We're just out here trying to get better for this year. And this is, it's away from the spotlight. But this is an important step toward improvement in 2012.
Finally, Mike, before we say goodbye, your thoughts on Eli Manning on Saturday Night Live?
I thought he did well. I thought, I was a little surprised at the range of characters he played, including at the end, as David Deal called it, the Chiquita Banana Lady with the blonde wig and the dress. And I asked him, I said, did you feel silly at all at any time? He said, no, I was just trying to do what they asked me to do. So I thought he did well, you know, a little limited by the scripts, but I thought he acquitted himself well. I think he should stick to football as for his primary source of income, but I thought he did. I thought he was impressive.
As is typical with Saturday Night Live, once Weekend Update goes by, usually there aren't that many skits worth watching. And that has nothing to do with Eli Manning.
Right,
it has everything to do with
Saturday Night Live. The history is it starts out pretty strong at 11:30, and by 12:30, this is lame.
Yeah, it's time to go to bed, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was surprised that you weren't sitting next to the offensive line and Eli's wife up there, Mike. I thought you connected here. What's going on?
Yeah, I was. There was a ticket list, and I was about 800,000th on that list. And I just didn't get to move up enough. But it was funny. I talked to three of the guys who were there, and they were all saying they were surprised at how small it was and how cramped it was. And David Boss said if he moved forward, Deal had to move back. If Deal moved forward, Boss had him.
Yeah, Boss told me the seats were very small.
Very small. And they didn't know that they thought they were going to be able to sit next to their wives. They got to the studio and they were told, no, you're going to be on camera. You all have to be together.
Show business.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. Michael, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you very much.
And,
of course, you can read Eisen's Mailbag every Tuesday on Giants.com, and you'll see Eisen's Mailbag every Thursday. This week it's going to be a special day. It's going to come on your day Wednesday. We're going to shoot that, in fact, in just a few minutes. And we'll get that done. Eisen's Mailbag, of course, on Giants.com. And Mike will be covering rookie minicamp this weekend as well. You guys can go there and check that out as the weekend goes along. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. I'm going to go back right now, and this is after the David Wilson pick. I know Giants are very excited for him to come in here and show the Giants what he can do. But I want to bring up Mark Ross here. This is Mark Ross addressing the media after the David Wilson pick, the Thursday night of the NFL draft.
Was it an easy pick?
Yeah, very easy. You know, in the draft, there's certain players that you evaluate when you go through the process that, despite differences on what you think his speed or toughness or this and that is, you come away after the end of your report saying, this guy's a good football player. And there's only a handful of those guys in the draft every year. And in our meeting, this was one of those players where everybody, despite what you may have thought, came away at the end of the report and said, this guy's a good football player. And, you know, that's very intriguing. Well, when the reports come in the fall about the guy, and then you kind of, the grades are coming in, and then once we start meeting and then everything merges together and we start stacking the board, then it becomes more clear about the pecking order between all the positions about who's going to go higher and how you like them.
When did you see him?
I saw him play against Virginia. They've left, you know, their big game this year at UVA, and, you know, he tore those guys up pretty good. Nah, he's kind of unique because, you know, he's smaller in stature, but, you know, real thick thighs. You'll see him when he comes here, and he's real powerful for a little guy. His balance is incredible. Just the way he can stay on his feet and get in awkward positions and still come out of it. But he also has speed. So nobody really comes to mind right away.
In his first 2 years there, they had Evans and Williams.
Right.
Did he come on your radar last year? Or
well, he's a guy you always noticed. You know, those good players, you always notice them when they're young. And he was a kid that they talked about, you know, big recruit, and he made big plays for him when he was young despite those other guys. He did the kick return stuff. So he's somebody you always noticed. When you see a guy running the 92-yard kickoff at the end of the game to win a game, you kind of take notice of him.
He'll be a lead running back at some point?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. He's done it there. You know, every game he's 100 yards putting up. He is their offense. And I think he can do the same thing up here.
In terms of off the field, what kind of reports did you get on him?
Tremendous. Tremendous. The best I've ever coached kind of reports. Best worker in here. Pound for pound strongest. Loves the game. Those type of – when you get those type of accolades from coaches, trainers, equipment people, whoever deals with the kid, you know, it and blend it together with a great football player, you know, you can't go wrong.
Jerry talked about his personality. He seems like a colorful guy.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's a live wire now. I mean, energetic, personable. You know, I don't know if you guys have seen, I thought I'd get the backflip question here early. I guess you guys haven't done your research, but you're getting there. You're getting there. So that's the first thing I saw when I called him and said, hey, you called JPP out, so you better come up here and deliver on these backflips. So, but he's that type of kid. Just an energetic live wire kid.
Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. That was Giants Director of College Scouting, Mark Ross, joining us. Last Thursday at the press conference talking about the Giants' selection of David Wilson, their first-round pick. He'll be arriving for rookie minicamp tomorrow along with the rest of the rookies. You'll have a little package on Giants.com showing all the rookies arriving. They get fitted for helmets, equipment, all that good stuff. So it should be a lot of fun. Check out Giants.com for that. And, of course, we'll cover to practice on Friday and Saturday. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. It comes your way every day from 10 to 10:30, and it's presented by Andrew Mark. You can listen on Giants.com. It's archived on Giants.com. You can get the podcast, and you can also listen on your Giants mobile app, so make sure you check that out as well. For Michael Eisen, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.